Title: A Most Tedious Letter. Silas Deane. Autographed letter signed to Patrick Henry. January 2nd, 1775. Weathersfield, Connecticut. From the James S. Scoff Revolutionary War Collection. William L. Clements Library. The University of Michigan. Transcription. Weathersfield, in Connecticut, January 2nd, 1775. Dear Sir, I have for some time waited, as well for a subject worth sending you from this distance, as for a certain opportunity of conveying a letter to your hands. Though near the great scene of action, or rather oppression, yet nothing can be as yet collected by which to determine, with the least degree of certainty, what the fate of Boston will finally be. The return of Scarborough gave us hopes of learning something of the disposition of the ministry, but nothing transpires. The men of war in the harbor, which had taken down their topmats, yards, etc., to be in a snug winter rig, instantly on her arrival went to running them up again and getting into readiness for sailing. The town of Boston continues firmly to pursue the measures they at first set out upon, and town meetings, instead of being suppressed by the late sovereign edict, are held more frequent than ever. Donations are constantly making to their poor by the neighboring colonies, but I fear inadequate to their real sufferings, which are immensely severe and great. I really question whether history can produce an instance parallel to the present stand which Boston is making for their liberties, for firmness, and resolving patience in enduring and forbearance under insults added to oppression. The militia of that, and indeed of all the New England provinces, will be on a very respectable footing before next spring. The method taken in that province is nearly this. All the old officers have resigned their commissions to the governor, in consequence of which the people within the limits of each respective regiment meet and make choice of others. In their room, where the officer resigned, is a person agreeable to the people, and of a military turn, he is chose by them afresh. After this, they make a draught of 1/3 of the whole who are to hold themselves in readiness with arms, ammunition, a good horse, and 10 days' provision, and to march at minute's warning. Their milita, as well as ours, consist of farmers and farmers' sons, and are perhaps to a man owner of horses, so that this is no expensive article, and is very essential, as well for the easy transportation of their provision, etc., as for expedition. For by this means the whole body, which will consist of between 20,000 and 30,000 of these in that province, may be assembled in 2 days' time at Boston. The governor had received a letter from Lord Dartmouth directing him to make seizure of arms or ammunition that may be imported into this colony, and I conclude it is circular. If so, yours will doubtless by this time have received one of the same tenor. We have received an account of a severe battle fought on the banks of Ohio between your people and the Indians, and that it is decisive, the Indians having made their peace by ceding all the lands of east of said river. If so, it is a vast addiction of territory to people which you will doubtless be willing to receive inhabitants from your neighbors or from abroad. Reflecting on the conversation passed between us at Philadelphia, I am inclined to think that a number of inhabitants from this colony would adventure on a settlement on the Ohio if properly informed and encouraged, and for this purpose wish to know the particular situation of the lands you told me you had purchased there, and the terms on which you would agree with them to settle. The character of our people is eminent for adventures of the kind, and it is computed that not less than 1,000 families or 4,000 persons annually emigrate to the neighboring provinces. They long since took up all the lands formerly possessed by the neutral French in Nova Scotia since the last war. They have taken up the lands in New York and New Hampshire as far north as those provinces extend, and have made a very large settlement on the Delaware and Susquehanna rivers under the Connecticut claim of a western extent to the South Sea, on which subject I gave you a book, wrote by Mr. Trumbull. Were these western lands out of dispute, and the title clear in the colony to everyone's satisfaction, and certainly they would afford ample room for our surplus of inhabitants, and we should in a few years break through the boundaries of the Quebec Empire. But the uncertainty of the title discourages men whose first principle is to possess a disencumbered freehold, be it ever so small, in preference to the largest under quit rents and landlords. The terms on which our people would prefer settling are chiefly these: to transport themselves onto the land at their own expense, to have a certain part or share of the land free and clear to them, on condition of their doing certain services upon it, such as cleaning, planting, building, etc. The performing which will render the other part of which of so much higher value, as richly to repay the original proprietor for their share of land which he assigned them. This share in New Hampshire, etc., has genuinely been the one half. Thus supposing you own a tract of 10 miles square which, continuing uninhabited and in a state of nature, can be of no value, and the settling it at your own expense must be a vast affair. Now by giving one half of it to a number of young industrious farmers on the condition of their sitting down with the families upon it, will immediately give a value to the other half, increasing in proportion to the settlement by the side of it, as these first settlers would soon be desirous of purchasing, or, if you choose to settle it with tenants, such a neighborhood would be of the last consequence for supplies and assistance. On such a plan, the lands given should be divided into lots of about 200 or 300 acres to each family, and not more, for a Connecticut farmer with 250 or 300 acres of good land is a rich man, that is as rich as he wishes to be. For this colony is now so full of inhabitants that there is not more than 12 acres to a person. It will be necessary, should any such scheme take place, to know how great the land carriage will be from your nearest seaport, and what the roads and probable expense of getting on to the lands. For if practicable, without too heavy disbursements, and the soil agreeable, I would engage a number to go on to the next season, and make a beginning. We sometimes have vessels from this to Alexandria, and should be glad to know how distant the water carriage of this river may be from the lands you mentioned. I could procure a number of sufficient for one town, who would incline to settle a little, or rather as much as possible, on the New England plan, which would be to have a reserve of land for a minister, and for a school, and if consistent with your constitution, to have such orders and regulations with respect to the domestic concerns of their settlement as they should find most convenient. Our trade, bad even in the best of times, must be totally ruined in the present and coming, and we have no employ so natural of our increasing youth as the forming of new settlements. We are already extended north to 45 degrees of latitude in the provinces of New Hampshire and New York, and the country, though under the disadvantages of a winter about as severe as the Europeans feel in 55 degrees, yet it is in a manner all patented out and settled. If we extend westward in our own latitude, our title will be disputed, and the winters are severe even in this parallel, though the soil is inviting, and though strongly invited to go on to the river Mississippi in the province of West Florida. Yet the distance discourages most of our young men, though several hundreds are already gone there with their families. Public as well as private interests urge to extend settlements of free and well-principled Protestants westward, in order to defeat the designed operation of that most execrable Quebec Act, of which I know you have a proper sense. Returning to politics, you will see that the Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, Connecticut have reappointed their delegates for May, with the addition of some others to their number. I will send you with this for your entertainment, the following papers. The character of Connecticut, the same which all the New England characters originally were, and Rhode Island now is. It is, in a word, an epitome of the patent granted by James I to the Plymouth Company by 1620, by which he granted to them all the lands from 40 degrees to 48 degrees of latitude from one sea to the other, from which Plymouth Company we derive our title first by purchase, and then confirmed by this character. The original Plymouth patent I have by me, but it is too lengthy to transcribe. I send you also some extracts from a manuscript history or diary wrote by the first Governor Winthrop, styled by historians the father of New England. A letter from King Charles II to the Governor and Company of Connecticut, desiring that an act should be passed against piracy. The number of our inhabitants, taken by order of our assembly, and also those of Rhode Island, these may be relied on as exact. The confederation or agreement of the people first settling this colony in 1638, under which they subsisted until the granting of the character in 1661, without a single reference to or notice taken of king, lords, commons, or any other power on earth, save that of the United Colonies, the articles of those confederation bearing date 1643, I also send you therewith, which was never dissolved until the year 1685, as nearly as I recollect, their records, at present, being out of my hands. I need not mention to you what would have been the consequences had this confederation had continued until now, and the other colonies early acceded to it. It is not, I trust, too late to form such an one that will suit our present circumstances, and which, being varied, as future contingencies arise, may last forever. Something of this kind appears to me most absolutely necessary. Let us turn which way we will, if a reconciliation with Great Britain takes place, it will be obtained on the best terms by the colonies being united, and be the more like to be preserved on just and equal terms. If reconciliation is to be had without a confederation, we are ruined, to all intents and purposes. United we stand, divided we fall, is our motto, and must be. One General Congress has brought the colonies to be acquainted with each other, and I am in hopes another may effect a lasting confederation, which will need nothing perhaps but time, to mature it into a complete and perfect American Constitution, the only proper one for us, whether connected with Great Britain or not. A sketch of this I likewise send you with other papers mentioned before. I mention to you a town on the New England plan. If you are not tired, I will describe the method of settling and governing one of them, from which sample you will be acquainted with the whole. All lands in New England, except in New Hampshire, are absolutely in the gift or disposal of the General Assembly. A number, suppose 60, apply for a township or tract of land 6 or 8 miles square. The Assembly grants on the following conditions. 70 families shall be settled within such a time, 4 or 5 years perhaps. They, being settled, shall support a minister or clergyman of some of the Protestant professions, dissenters to be preferred, also a schoolmaster. When they become more numerous and are desirous of it, they may send deputies to the General Assembly. But when they do this, and not before, they are liable to be taxed by the Assembly for the support of government. A certain tract or share of land, generally about 500 or 600 acres, is reserved for the use of clergymen, and as much more for a schoolmaster. All their domestic police is under their own regulation. They must at least once each year, and make choice of a number of the more steady of their number for select men, as they are called. There are officers not under oath, but act in a judicial manner in conducting all the public affairs of the town, in which they are accountable to no one but to the inhabitants in full meeting. Their power is almost unlimited over the poor, the idle, the dissolute, over highways, bridges, public nuances, etc., in all which cases they hear and determine absolutely and without fee or reward. Their power expires within the year, when new ones, or they are rechosen. They are in short a sort of censors on the manners of the people. They summon the people together as they judge proper, and when convened, the inhabitants have a right of taxing themselves for such purposes as the times present, in particular for all the expenses of the town, civil as well as ecclesiastical, for the supporting their school, their clergy, their poor, etc., etc. They choose other officers under these such as constables, grand jurors, surveyors of the road, collectors of the taxes they levy, a clerk, a treasurer, etc., all of whom are accountable to, and removable by, the people in town meeting assembled. Justices of the peace, sheriffs, and judges of the court are independent of the voice of the particular towns. Thus, each town is, in some degree, a distant republic, with power even of passing what they call bylaws, not repugnant to those of the colony passed in General Assembly, where they are all united by a representation chosen by each annually, or twice each year, as in the case with us in Connecticut. All ecclesiastical matters, such as the choice of a minister, his mode of settlement, his support, his removal in case of dissatisfaction, is in the power of the inhabitants, and yet disputes between the clergy and people and their parting seldom happen. Indeed, I conceive a capital reason why they are not now frequent is the entire liberty at which they mutually are to leave each other on being dissatisfied. Such a kind of domestic government, I conclude, could not be expected with you, but should be glad to know whither the inhabitants will be obliged to pay to the support of an episcopal clergy, whether they are of that persuasion or not, and also whether the quit rent will be immediately and rigorously exacted, and how large the sum. I say immediately, for the day is not distant when these quit rents will be little more than a sound, for the Crown, never having any constitutional right to exactions of this kind, and introducing them at first at a trifling sum, and not being rigorous in the exactions they have been continued, and tolerated to this time, but will be shook off with other impositions of the kind, when America comes to the enjoyment of that perfect liberty to which she is entitled. I have wrote you a most tedious letter, and will not go on, to add one transgression to another, by still lengthening it with apologies, so will only add that I hope it will cost you nothing more than the reading, which you will do at your leisure. If you are near Colonel Bland, I pray of you the favor to obtain of him, and send me the date of the first Virginia patent and its boundaries. The protest of the House of Burgesses, signed by them and their governor, and ratified by Charles I against the dismembering of the Dominion of Virginia. This was, I think, in 1642. The second patent or charter of Virginia was, if I remember right, in James I's reign. I wish to see the date and boundaries. Colonel Bland was kind enough to offer me such extracts from his valuable collection as I should send to him for, and I will trouble him for no more at present, unless he has any account of any grant of North Virginia, so called at that day, afterwards New England, antecedent to the year 1620. If he has, I wish to see the date and boundaries. If he has not the Plymouth or New England patent of 1620, and is desirous of it, I will forward him a copy, as also of any paper to be procured in these parts. There is no such thing as procuring a good history of Virginia in this colony. I shall be greatly obliged to you to send me the most authentic extant, and in return will favor you with the history of New England in general, but of Connecticut in particular, which will be soon sent to the press, and from the ingenuity of the author, and the attention he has for several years paid to it, will I trust to be the best ever yet published. I shall forward this packet to Mr. Mifflin, to whom I have wrote, to send it by some private but trusty hand to Virginia, to his care. Please to direct your answer, unless a more direct conveyance offer. I ought perhaps to mention that we returned during the sitting of our General Assembly, who most unanimously approved of the doings of the Congress, and recommended the association to the strict observance of the inhabitants, who universally and without hesitation have determined to abide thereby. Please to present my compliments to the gentlemen with whom I had the happiness of being acquainted in Congress, if you see them. I am with great truth and regard, dear sir, your most obedient and very humble servant, Silas Deane. Addressed to Patrick Henry Jr., Esquire, Attorney at Law, at Scotchtown in Hanover County, Virginia.